Hey, let's discuss the sugya of mitav, bavakama vav, amin b. So the Mishnah, bavakama b's amin af, the opening Mishnah, tells us that, exact terminology, so the Mishnah opens up by mentioning that tashlumei nezek has to take the form of mitav ha'aretz. And expanding on that Mishnah, so the Gemara cites a machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Akiva, which eventually Rav Acha bar Yaakov. Oh no, I already have a mess up in the sheet. Okay. So he explains that that's a debate, whether Shamin b'dinizak or Shamin b'dimazik. So what does this mean, Shamin b'dinizak or Shamin b'dimazik? So it's a case where the mazik's ziboris is of equal stature to the nizak's idis. So then, according to Rabbi Akiva, so according to Rabbi Yishmael, so the mazik could pay from his ziboris, because that equals the nizak's idis, and we follow the nizak's idis. But according to Rabbi Akiva, he has to pay from his idis, because we always follow his own idis. That's shaman b'demazik. And just to clarify, so the Gemara makes very clear that according to both Tanoim, the chiyuv of meitav corresponds only to the quality of the land, but not to the difference in value, even though there were havaminas otherwise. So therefore, the mazik's always going to be paying the exact value of the nezek, but it's just that the payment will take the form of meitav. So the questions that we addressed in Shir included, perhaps we're not limited to, but it certainly included the following. What are the nature and also the machayiv of the chiyuv of meitav? Why is it that the Torah requires the mazik to pay of meitav? And how are we supposed to characterize that chiyuv? In addition to that, how exactly are we supposed to define meitav? Meitav ha'aretz means the best of the land. But what exactly is the best? That's a little bit of an ambiguous term. And thirdly, as we mentioned before, the machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Akiva. So how is it that meitav is assessed? And what's exactly at the root of the dispute, the nekudas ha'machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Akiva, whether shaman b'dinizak or shaman b'dimazik? So let's begin, as we always do, from the most fundamental of questions in the sugya, and that is the nature and the basis for chiyuv of meitav. So here I think that in Shir we explored, broadly speaking, three different options as to the basis for the chiyuv of meitav. The first one is what I termed an external tnai b'tashlumin. That's what Rebbe was calling like the kiyum ha'tashlumin. And what that means is that for tashlumei nezek, the Torah requires the mazik to pay the value of the nezek in a quid pro quo fashion. You damaged X, therefore you have to pay X. And the chiyuv of meitav is something that is added on to that base chiyuv. So the Torah says the mazik has to pay, and when he pays, he should do so in the form of meitav. So that's why I termed it as something external. If you kind of envision the picture, so the ikker circle is the chiyuv, and then on top of that, we add the meitav. And that could be for a number of reasons. It could be for a reason that pertains to the nizak. It could be for a reason that pertains to the mazik. Just for clarification purposes, so I quoted two reasons that the Chizkuni, in his Perush, Ala Torah, cites, that both pertain to the Nizak. I think earlier this year we quoted the Chizkuni as having three different explanations as to why the Torah requires Meitav. And the Chizkuni's explanations really don't accord with Rebbe's, you know, fundamental approach to the Chiyuv of Meitav that we'll see in just a few moments. But two of his reasons really get out this approach of the external Tanai B'Tashlumi. The Chizkuni explains that the Nizak might prefer Kav Shalo from Kavim Shal Chaviro. Someone always wants his own property more than he wants someone else's. Or that the Nizak prefers the Mizuman property that he already has. He's put a lot of effort into his field. He's plowed it. He's made sure that it's ready for usage. So he prefers that even to the Mazik's property. And therefore, in order to appease or placate the Nizak, the Mazik has to pay with Meitav Ha'aretz. So again, that would just be like the reason for this Tanai B'Tashlumin. Really, the Mazik just has to pay the value. But the reason why he has to pay Dafka Meitav is for some other external reason, namely to appease the Nizak. When we threw around the word technical, that's what we meant. Technical in Shir always means the least inspiring. So that's what we meant. The next approach is to say that the chiyuv of mitav is really like a knas on the mazik. So the mazik did something wrong by damaging the fields or property of the nizak, and therefore, in order to be konis, the mazik, the Torah tells him that not only is he going to have to pay back, but he's going to have to pay the best of his own property. What evidence do we have towards that conclusion? So we have a number of indications, both in Shas and in Rishonim. The first one is the time of the Krav of Rab Shimon from Gittin Mamtes Amid Beis, where Rab Shimon explains that the reason why mazik is b'meitav is because we're trying to discourage theft. So if a mazikin know that they're going to have to pay from mitav, then they're not going to be gozel or chomes, and that applies across the board to all nezikin. In addition to that, we also have the havamina and vavamibes, that ochal kechusha meshalim shmina. The Rabbi Shmuel would hold that even if the mazik was mazik a kechusha, he would have to pay back shmina. That's the havamina, that there would be a difference in price value, that the mazik would have to actually have to pay back more than he damaged. So how could we justify such a havamina? So Rabbeinu Kreskes in Gittin, and this is also somewhat mashma in Tosfos al-Atar, explain that this would be rooted in the idea of a knas, that the mazik would be penalized for his nezek, and therefore would actually have to pay back more than what he damaged. In addition, I saw this Chuvas HaRashba, the great Chuvas HaRashba, which is actually very much related to what Rebbe was speaking about in Shir. I meant to bring this up to him, but never got around to it. Where the Shoel in the Chuvas HaRashba comes in with the assumption that the Chiyuv of Meitav should be limited to cases where the Meitav will actually where the Meitav is coming in response to like a Nezek Bechavana. So his case is where if you have Shein Verega, or Shein, that's Ochel Mitzide Rishos HaRabim. So you have to pay Mishali Mashananis. So the show on the Chuvas HaRashba says that Tashlumin shouldn't have to be Meitav. Why? Because there was no Kavana Lahazik here. Right? This is, I mean, so much so that we don't even require the owner of the animal to pay for the Nezek. He only has to pay for the Anah. So he shouldn't have to pay Meitav. Why? Because the whole basis for Meitav is to discourage theft, as we saw in the Gemara in Gittin, according to the time of the Kra of Reb Shimon. So you see that approach of the Shoal and the Chuvas HaRashba really takes this to its nth degree. Rebbe even asked the question that according to the time of the Krav Reb Shimon, how is it that we extend from Gazlanos and Chamsanos across the board to all of the Minei Nezikin, all of the Chaf Dalet Avos of Reb Chiya? Because it's not the case that in each and every one of those Avos we're going to have this type of philosophy of discouragement. So he said either it could be low plug or because there's some common denominator that extends across all. But certainly the Shoel and the Chuvas HaRashba is coming in with the approach that actually it should be limited. And then the Rashba responds that no, once there's some expression or some application of discouragement within an Av Nezek, so then it's going to apply to all cases within that Nezek. So since, for example, in the Av of Shein, it's possible for the owner of the animal to actually send his animal to go eat someone else's property. That's a nezek bechavana that we want to discourage. So therefore, with regard to all nizkeishin, the chiyuv is going to be meitav, even though the discouragement won't necessarily apply to every single case of shein. Okay, just thought that was an interesting marker. Do we have any shitos that actually seem to hold of this lemaskana? One more thing. So in the Shito section here, where I wrote Bal Korcho versus Midaito, really that should go in the evidence section, so I'll just talk about that first. So the Gemara later on, where it's talking about when you'll be able to pay with Shava Kasef, and when you'll have to pay from actual meat, from with Karka of Mitav. So it has a havamina to distinguish between midaito and bakorcha. That when the mazik is paying midaito, so then he can choose what he wants to pay, or he could pay shava kesef. But when he's paying bakorcha, so then bezdin is yori than a chasav, and he has to pay from mitav haaretz, from his best karka. How do we explain that havamina? So Rebbe explained this along the lines of shava kesef kekesef, and a whole diyun there, I'm not getting into that. But the Pashtos in Rishonim, in Rashi, in the Shita Mekubetzes, is that this has to do with the Nezek itself. And again, Rashi's formulation is that Bezdin is Yorin and Achasaf. Why would there be a difference between Midayto and Baal Korcho? So Rebbe suggested that perhaps if the Mazik is paying Baal Korcho, so then we could see this payment as more of a Knas. Meaning you're being so obstinate that you won't even pay, then we're going to penalize you in the form that you pay. And we're going to make you pay the mitaf. So that was another indication of this approach of Knas. The Chizkuni, in his third daya, as to why the Torah requires mitaf, remember we mentioned before two other explanations as to why there's a chi of mitaf. So in his third explanation, he says exactly this point, that mitaf is a requirement in order to discourage the mazik from damaging. Certainly that coheres very nicely with this Knas approach. So far what we've seen are two approaches to the chiyuv of mitav. The first one, and most simple, is that this is just a tanai b'tashlumin. The Torah requires a quid pro quo payment, and for some reason it says that payment has to take the form of mitav. The second one is that mitav is a knas. And the third one, yeah.
Are those mutually exclusive? Are those very overlapping?
Yeah, I think the knas could be a reason as to why.
Why there's a tanai atera
there. Right, and a knas could be that reason, yeah. So the third one that Rabbi really preferred the most, or found most inspiring, was what I termed the beyond quid pro quo category. And this takes on a number of different formulations. In the footnote, I tried to collect all of the different formulations. And the basic explanation is that nezek, or at least hashlume nezek, transcends just the compensation of value. Your mechaser someone else X money, the Torah doesn't just say that you have to provide him with X money. They have to return X money. Rather, you have to make up, to some extent, for the damaging act that you did. A meis and nezek is more than just a hefsin mamun. It's very befitting that we're ending off the year on this note, because this is probably the most ubiquitous theme that we had throughout the year. And in order to accentuate that tashlume nezek is more than just this quid pro quo payment, so the Torah requires that you pay meitav. What idea could this payment be? What could be the idea of this payment? So if you look at the footnote, it could be an idea of replacement, that you're trying to actually replace the be'en that you damaged, or you're trying to demonstrate that the be'en that you damaged cannot be replaced, and therefore you pay with top dollar, or maybe you're trying to project the worst case scenario, either on the nizak or on the mazik, meaning making the mazik feel as if he experienced the worst damage possible, so then he'll have to pay mitav as well. What indications do we have of this approach? So number one, Rabbi mentioned that this might explain why mitav is so front and center, both in the Gemara and also in the presentation of the Rambam. We noted at the very beginning of the shir that the Mishnah mentions the tashlumin of mitav. And so too, the Rambam in Perek Aleph, Halacha Beis, also mentions that the chiyuv of tashlumin is going to be with mitav. Why is it that mitav is so prominent? So perhaps because mitav is an expression of the yesod of mazik, that chiyuv of tashlumin nezek is more than just a quid pro quo payment, the way that halva might be, or the way that other tashlumin might be. In addition to that, Rav Rosenzweig mentioned the makor of Shein Verega. Why is it that mitav appears within the context of Shein Verega? So you could give a number of explanations to this question, and we're not going to have any hechrechus on this question, but that's why it's just an indication. And Rav Rosenzweig suggested that maybe it's because Shein Verega would be the least obvious nezek to which to apply mitav. And that's especially if this is the correct approach towards the tashlumin of mitav. Why? Because maybe Shein V'Regel would be the nezek that we would view most as quid pro quo. Because Shein V'Regel doesn't have any outstanding feature. It's just a mimela happenstance type of nezek. So there was a half sin mamon, you have to make up for that. That's what you might have thought. Kamash malan the Torah, that no, you have to pay mitav even for Shein V'Regel. Whether that be maintaining the assumption that Shein V'Regel is quid pro quo and nonetheless you have to pay mitav, or whether that actually be changing our approach towards Shein V'Regel. And that goes back to shiurim that we had earlier in the year, that we might view Shein V'Regel as something more than just a return of a hefsid mum. Okay, so those, I think, are the three main approaches that we took towards the chiyuv of tashlume mitav. What nafkamina could we have to these three approaches? So one might pertain to the definition of the schus meitav. And that really arises around the following question. So when we say meitav, remember we opened up by saying that meitav means the best, and that's an ambiguous term. What does the best mean? So does it mean that the nizak has a right to demand anything that he prefers? It's a subjective best. It's what's ever best to the nizak. Or does it mean that he only has the right to demand meitav because there's some objective best? The Torah basically says that there's a quality of land that's considered the best land. There's an objective best land, meitav ha'aretz, and that is the shibud on meitav is what the Torah establishes. So the nafkamina here would be this question that arises in the Rishonim and the Rush as to tfiyas benunis. Let's say the nizak comes up to the mazik and he says, I want benunis. I don't want idis. I want benunis. Does the nizak have a right to be machriach the mazik to give him benunis? So most of the Rishonim say yes, and that could be for a number of reasons. Maybe because of what we're saying here, that really meitav just means whatever the nizak prefers, or they could say that really the Torah means meitav and the objective meitav, but bichlal that meitav is anything less, meaning the Torah requires the best. So kol shekein that the Torah will allow something less. But according to the Rush, the nizak does not have that right. The mazik can always respond that he does not want to give benonis unless he's already megaladas that he really was willing to give the benonis. So what's the yesona machlokas between the Rishonim here? So I thought, I'm not sure whether we made this connection so clearly in Shir, but I think it's pretty mistaber, that if you think that the chiyuv of meitav to begin with is just like an external tnai b'tashlumin, and especially if you take the Chizkuni's approach, that tnai is coming as to placate and appease the nizak, so then it should be up to the nizak to decide how he wants to be paid. And that would explain the shita of Rov Rishonim, that the nizak could prefer benonis. But if we think that the chiyuv of meitav transcends just the appeasement of the nizak, whether that be because of a knas, or whether that be because we're trying to hit home the idea that the tashlumin transcends just the quid pro quo. So then it's not going to be within the nizak's rights to determine how the tashlumin happens. We might have even had the havamina that under all circumstances you had to pay meitav. Apparently we don't see that in Rishonim. Even the Rosh says that if the mazik agrees, then he could pay benonis. But for sure, l'chol apachos, you could say that it's not going to be within the nizak's domain to determine how this tashlumin is going to transpire. So far we've addressed the mechayev and the nature of tashlumi meitav, and also the parameters and the definition of meitav. So now let's get to our third question, which is the machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Akiva and how we assess meitav. So I separated this as a separate question, but as we'll see, as per our analysis, it really relates back to our previous question as well. So first of all, what's the nekudas machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Akiva, whether shaman b'dinizak or shaman b'dimazik? So here we suggested a number of possibilities. We said that perhaps the Tanoim agree that meitav is really just like an external tanai b'tashlumin, and they just disagree whether the best way to fulfill that tanai b'tashlumin is via the nizak's property or the mazik's property. So we can very much understand... especially if we're trying to appease the nizak, so we might go basar shaman b'dinizak. I mean, we'll say that the nizak has to get back whatever he was accustomed to having. If we're trying to penalize the mazik a little bit more, or we're trying to project the worst case scenario, so then you could explain that shaman b'dimazik. But either way, both Tanoim would agree that this is really just a tanai b'tashlumin, and just the disagreement is more of a quote-unquote technical one as to how to define what the best way to have this tanai b'tashlumin would be. Another approach that we suggested, although I really don't think this is so feasible, is that perhaps both Tanoim agree that this is like an expression of the beyond the quid pro quo, and the machlokas is as to the best or most proper expression of that idea. And I think this arose in the Havamina of the Teferes Shmuel that Azi quoted, where the Teferes Shmuel and other Achronim ask on the Rush, we'll get to this in a second, but the Rush brings up the case of the case brought up in the Gemara for Rabbi Yishmael, where the ziboris of the mazik is less than the edus of the nizak, but then the mazik also has a benonis that's yoser from the edus of the nizak. Mm. So can the mazik pay with his benonis? He definitely can't pay with his ziboris. Can he pay with his benonis, or does he have to pay with his edus? That was two deos in the Rosh, and again we'll get back to this in a second. But what the Achronim ask on the Rosh is, why even bring that up? We pass in like Rabbi Akiva, a Shamed b'demazik. So one Shamed b'demazik, so there's no credence to that question. The mazik's always going to have to pay his own edus. So why are you even getting into this discussion? So Teferes Shmuel has a whole explanation that maybe also has shaychus for the mazik in a case where we're shamed b'shal olam, and the shal olam, the beinunis of the mazik is shavek kishal olam of the mean the idis shal olam, but the mazik also has ide idis. He also has something that's even better than the shal olam. So that might also be a nafkamina from this discussion of Rabbi Yishmael. So, but first of all, that's just a havamina and the Teferes Shmuel. But basically, what we were saying based on that havamina is that, if we really held that that mid de Rabbi Yishmael nishmal Rabbi Akiva, so then we can make the argument that both Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva are holding of this fundamental approach. I probably should have first explained that the Rabbi Yishmael's approach of Shaman b'dinizak is the best way to say this fundamental approach, but I'll get to that in a second. But either way, once you say that, so then if you say midu Rabbi Yishmael nishma de Rabbi Akiva, so you could say that both Tanoim are agreeing to this beyond the quid pro quo approach. Put that in brackets because I don't really think that has much going for it. The last approach probably has the most going for it, is that Rabbi Akiva would view Meitav as the Tanai B'Tashlumin, whereas Rabbi Akiva would view the Meitav as more of the Knas or Hashavas HaNezek idea, this beyond the quid pro quo idea. Why would you say that? So Rabbi Akiva saying that this is just a Tanai B'Tashlumin makes very much sense. The Mazik perpetrated some wrong act. He's chayav to pay for that act, and therefore the way in which he pays for that act should depend on his own property. And the entire discussion focuses and centers on the Mazik. So why would Rabbi Yishmael say Shamin Bidin Nizak? So perhaps the idea of Rabbi Yishmael is that you're trying to restore the Be'en of the Nizak. You're trying to account for the fact that you damaged the Be'en of the Nizak. And you're trying to either restore it or trying to express that it cannot be restored. And therefore you're going to follow the property of the Nizak. Shamin Bidin Nizak. What indications do we have of this approach to the machlokas between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva? So we mentioned a few. First of all, it's interesting that the Gemara has a havamina of Acha Kechusha Meshalim Shmina only for Rabbi Yishmael. Tosfos and the Ritva and Gittin both point that out. And the Ritva and Gittin says, so the question is, why do we limit this havamina to Rabbi Yishmael? Why don't we extend it to Rabbi Akiva? So at least I didn't see this Ritva inside, but the way that Natan quoted it, the way we said it in Shir, was that the Ritva says that Rabbi Yishmael's approach is less intuitive than Rabbi Akiva's. And therefore, for the less intuitive approach, we'll have the less intuitive Havamina. We'll have the Havamina that you could actually have to pay more than you damaged. So that's a great indication that Rabbi Yishmael's approach is not just rooted in quid pro quo payment. It's not just an exchange of Hefsid X for X. Rather, what Rabbi Yishmael is trying to say is that you have to restore everything that you damaged, and you actually have to account for the fact that you did something that was more than just a hefsin mamon. So there you'll have the havamina that maybe you would even have to pay more than what you damaged. In addition, why is the discussion of the machlokas of Bishal Olam Him Shaiminon or Bishalo Him Shaiminon limited to the position of Rabbi Akiva, at least according to the Pashlis and the Gemara? So the Tosfos HaRosh has this comment where he says that it's because Rabbi Yishmael made very clear at the very beginning of the sugya that Shamin b'dinizak. Made it very clear. So Rav Rosenzweig suggested that that's more than just a linguistic comment. That's more than just saying Rabbi Yishmael already told you Shamin b'dinizak, so don't have a havamina that bishal olam. Rav Rosenzweig explained that what the Tosfos HaRosh is trying to say is that Rabbi Yishmael's whole view is rooted in Shamin b'dinizak. Shamin b'dinizak is an expression of the Mechayiv of Mitav being this beyond the quid pro quo idea and trying to restore what you damage of the Nizak. And therefore, it's always going to pertain to the property of the Nizak. So those were the approaches that we took to the Nekudas and Machlokas between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva. But now let's get into the details of the position of Rabbi Yishmael. Because what the Gemara concludes is that for Rabbi Yishmael, Ahani Gzeir Shava Ahani Kra. Ahani Gzeir Shava that will be Shaman B'Denizak in the classic case. But Ahani Kra for the following case. Kigon the Isle Lamazik Ibis Viziboris. The Mazik has both Ibis and Ziboris. The Ibis Lenizak. And the Nizak has some Ibis. Viziboris the Mazik Lo Shavya Ki Ibis Denizak. And the Ziboris of the Mazik is not Shave like the Ibis of the Nizak. So then what will be the Din? The Mishalim Lemi Meitav Didei. So then the Mazik will have to pay his own Ibis. The Lo Matzi Omer Le Ta'at Gave Viziboris El Agave Mimeitav. He can't say to the Nizak, come and collect from the Ziboris. Rather, the Mazik has to give of his own Ibis. So we see that there is some expression, at least in a technical way, meaning in a Metzius way, where Rabbi Shmuel agrees that the Mazik is going to pay Ibis Shalom, Ibis Didei, Shamin Bid the Mazik, so to speak. So how do we view this relationship between Ahani Gzeir Shava and Ahani Kra? The case in which Shamin b'Denizak, that the Tashlumin will follow the Idis of the Nizak, and the case in which the Tashlumin will follow the Idis of the Mazik. So we suggested three approaches. The first one is that really there's one Mechayiv of this external Tanai b'Tashlumin, that the form that the Tashlumin takes has to be Meitav, but there's two different types of Meitav. Rabbi Yishmael says, I can view Meitav either as Meitav of the Nizak or as Meitav of the Mazik. And most likely will follow whichever one is more kal. So if Meitav of the Nizak is more kal, then we'll follow Meitav of the Nizak. But when Meitav of the Nizak is not possible, such as the case of Ahani Kra, so then we'll jump to Meitav of the Mazik. There's just a din of Meitav that the form of the Tashlumin has to take the form of Meitav. The next approach that we considered is that really, there's one mechayiv of the beyond quid pro quo idea. What I was explaining before, that shamin b'denizak is an expression or reflection of the mechayiv of meitav. That you're trying to make up for the maisa nezek that you did, and therefore the tashlumin follows the property of the nizak. But in a case in which, like the Ahani Kra case, where the Ziboris of the Mazik doesn't meet the Idis of the Nizak, so then the Mazik will have to pay his own Idis. Why? Because really that's a kiyum of Meitav the Nizak. The only way in which you can fulfill Meitav the Nizak in that case, the only way in which you can restore his property, is by paying your own Meitav, your own Idis. Because by paying your own Ziboris, you won't do a sufficient restoration. You won't do a sufficient replacement, because it won't match the Idis of the Nizak. And then finally, we consider the idea that maybe Rabbi Yishmael holds of two distinct mechayvim. Maybe he holds of both the Tanai B'Tashlumin idea and the Beyond Quid Pro Quo idea. And he says that when one is Shayach, so when one is more Kal, you'll pay that one. So if we could always say Shamin B'Denizak, and if that happens to be more kal than shaman bid the mazik, so then you'll have shaman bid the nizak. But if you can only do shaman bid the mazik, so then Rabbi Yishmael is not saying that he disagrees fundamentally with the mechayiv of Rabbi Akiva. He's saying, I hold of both ideas. They're not mutually exclusive, and whichever one is more kal will win. What nafkamina do we have to this question? So we have the very famous two deos in the Rosh. Why did the Gemara only talk about Ziboris and Idis? Why did it not talk about a case of Beinonis? We referenced this before. So let's say the case is the Beinonis of the Mazik is Shavu Yosef from the Idis of the Nizak, but the Ziboris of the Mazik doesn't meet the Idis of the Nizak. What will the Mazik have to pay? So intuitively, we would have said, like the Yash Omrim in the Rosh, that the Mazik would have to pay his Beinonis. Why? Because his Beinonis is Shavu Yosef from the Idis of the Nizak. And according to Rabbi Yishmael, we're Shamin bid the Nizak. So why shouldn't he be able to pay with his Beinonis? But the Rosh has the Chiddush that no, the Mazik has to pay his Idis. Even though his Beinonis is Shavu Yosef from the Idis of the Nizak, nonetheless, the Mazik's going to have to pay his Idis. What is the Nekudas HaMachlokas? So the Yesh Omrim in the Rosh is very easy to explain. All we're trying to say is Shamin bid the Nizak, where you Shamin based on the value of the Idis of the Nizak, and therefore you have to give the Nizak something that is worth either equal to or more than the Idis of the Nizak. So therefore, you could pay your Beinonis, because it's all based on the Idis of the Nizak. And that can be explained regardless of what approach you take to Shaman Vidinizak, even if you take the fundamental approach, you could still explain the position of the Asha Omrim, because you're doing an act of restoration by giving the Nizak something that is worth equal to or more than his Itis. But how are we going to justify the position of the Rush? Why would the Mazik have to pay his own Itis? So seemingly the Rush is going to have to hold of this Tzvei Dinim idea, either of two types of Meitav with one Mechayiv, or two totally different Mechayiv. And what the Rosh is saying is that the Torah always requires metav. Kishmo kein hu, metav. Either that can be in the form of metav of the Nizak, that Shaman bid the Nizak, or it could be in the form of metav of the Mazik. And that could be either because both constitute two different types of metav, either both different types of one mechayiv of a tanai b'tashlumin, that was option one above, or because Rabbi Yishmael holds of two different mechayivim. Meitav of the Nizak reflects one idea, Meitav of the Mazik reflects another idea, and you have to do one of them, whichever one is going to be more kal. So you see, based on our analysis, that this obviously this discussion relates back to the mechayivim that we set out at the very beginning of the shiur. What about Rabbi Yishmael kechumrah? Can Rabbi Yishmael ever be a chumrah? So Rashi and Zayin Amad Aleph, and the way that we read the Rashba and Vav Amid Beis, both seem to hold that Rabbi Yishmael inherently is a kula. But there are expressions in Rishonim, and specifically within Tosfos has two different hechitimtzas, where Rabbi Yishmael will be a chumrah. You could look on the sheet for those hechitimtzas. One is within the Manda Amr Bishal Olam, and another within the Manda Amr Bishalam. So how can we explain the position of Tosfos that Rabbi Yishmael can be more machmir than Rabbi Akiva? So the point that we made was that this position is not compatible with the Rush's position from before. That according to Rabbi Yishmael, there exists a choice between two different types of mitav, either as just two different forms of mitav within one mechayiv, or two different mechayivim of mitav. Why is viewing Rabbi Yishmael as a chumrah not compatible with Tzvei Dinim? Because if you hold of Tzvei Dinim, then what Rabbi Yishmael is saying is that the mazik will have to pay the more kal of those two dinim. So then what emerges is that Rabbi Yishmael will always be lahakel. If you have two different options, the mazik will always pay the lesser of those two options. And if that's the case, then Rabbi Yishmael will always be lahakel. And that's the formulation of the Rashba, that Rabbi Yishmael is ba lahakel. But according to Tosos, that Rabbi Yishmael could be lahachmir. So then that could accord very nicely with the approach that the mechayiv for Rabbi Yishmael is a real shaman b'dinizak. That shaman b'dinizak is a reflection of this mechayiv of the beyond the quid pro quo. And therefore, as we explained before, sometimes you'll have to pay the chumrah if that chumrah is what accomplishes this idea of the shaman b'dinizak. It's always going to follow whatever the mechayiv is. So if the mechayiv is a genuine shaman b'dinizak, by that I mean this restoration idea. So then if the more chamur payment satisfies that idea, whereas the more kal payment does not, you'll have to pay the more chamur payment. And that could be the explanation of Rabbi Yishmael Lahachmir. So we mentioned before that an indication of this approach to Rabbi Yishmael, that his shita is this fundamental shaman b'dinizak, could be that the machlokas of b'shalo v'shal olam is limited to Rabbi Akiva in the Gemara. But is that really true? So Tosfos in Baba Kama Zayin Amud Beis says that yeah, it's not applicable to Rabbi Yishmael; it only applies to Rabbi Akiva. But if you take a look at the Gilyon, I think Rabbi said to see this Gilyon. So the Gilyon has an amazing pshat. The Gilyon says that the machlokas b'shalo b'shal olam always applies to Rabbi Akiva, and it applies to half of Rabbi Yishmael. Which half of Rabbi Yishmael? The ahani kra of Rabbi Yishmael. Why? Because the ahani kra side of Rabbi Yishmael is the side of Rabbi Yishmael that agrees with Rabbi Akiva. So that part, for that element of Rabbi Yishmael, we will have the machlokas of b'shalo or b'shal olam. But for the Ahani Gzeira Shava side of Rabbi Yishmael, we won't have the machlokas of Bishalo Bishal Olam. Of course it'll be Bishalo, because it's Shamin B'dinizak. What's Psha? So there, the Gilyon is clearly holding of two Mechayvim, were at least two different forms of mitav within Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael is holding of two deen. There's a mitav of the nizak, and there's a mitav of the mazik. And when Rabbi Yishmael holds of the mitav of the mazik, then he just reduces to Rabbi Akiva's camp. And then everything that applies to Rabbi Akiva will also apply to Rabbi Yishmael. So you'll apply b'shalom b'shal olam also to Rabbi Yishmael. But when he holds of his own position, his unique position, namely, ahani gzeir shava of shaman b'dinizak, so then you can't entertain b'shalo or b'shal olam. Either fundamentally because shaman b'dinizak is trying to reflect this restoration idea, or and therefore, of course, it would have to be b'shalo. You're not going to assess you're not going to assess restoration based on b'shal olam. Restoration is, by definition, a personal idea. You're trying to restore this act that you did to your friend. Or because just the mitav of the other approach that we were saying, that really Rabbi Yishmael agrees with Rabbi Akiva that there's one mechayiv of a quid pro quo tashlumin, but maybe he holds up two different ways to fulfill that, and when he says that it's mitav de nizak, so then you're going to have to go based on the mitav of the nizak. But I think that saying bishalo dafka for mitav de nizak, of shaman b'de nizak, is really a nice expression of this fundamental approach towards Rabbi Yishmael, that you're trying to accomplish this restoration idea that you can only do via the property of the nizak. You can't assess that based on objective values of property. Okay, we're going to stop here. Not going to go through all of the ha'aros that we made on Maaser Ani and the other ha'aros that we made on Baal Chov and Ksuba at the end of the last shiur. You should see that in the notes and go over it on your own. And a huge yashar koach for the whole year. Yashar koach.